Hello everyone. Just while we wait for a few more people, we do have two very quick questions for you. So if you could answer them, that would be great. Seems like a variety of experiences here. So we can start in 1 minute. Hi, Andrew. Nice seeing you. So let me start giving a small introduction. So to start off, I'm Sevjan and I'm the marketing executive for Knowledge Train. Knowledge Train actually owns Agile KLC. Just before I head over to Barbara, I would actually like to say that right at the end there will be a Q&A, roughly around 10 to 15 minutes. So if you do have any questions or recommendations or any comments on Barbara's presentation, feel free to leave it in the comments and then we can go through them at the end. Just going to close the poll now. Yep, over to you, Barbara.
Okay, well, good evening, everybody, or afternoon, good evening. So thanks for joining this webinar, and thanks to KLC for giving me a chance to talk about Agile again, which I thoroughly enjoy doing. I know at least one of you on that list that I can see a name I recognise, but for those of you that don't know me, I've been working with Agile basically forever. Even when I started out in IT, I always worked in an Agile way. I just didn't know what it was called. And basically, I specialise in Agile in the complex corporate world. So I end up doing the difficult Agile transformations, the complex ones where you've got formal regulatory or particular difficult problems. And I'm lucky enough to get invited to talk Agile all around the world, which is great fun. Anyone that knows me knows I'm passionate about doing this. But also, I'm a very, very keen on the agnostic Agile oath. Although I have a lot of enthusiasm for Agile Business Consortium, creating Agile PM was actually my idea for APMG originally. But my style is that it's about choosing the right approach, the most appropriate approach, not my Agile is better than your Agile. So that's the background to me. What I'm going to talk about tonight, it was interesting to see we've got a good mix of knowledge from I don't know anything about Agile to an expert, so that always makes it interesting. So some of you might find some of this fairly basic, others will hopefully find it useful. I wanted to talk a little bit about Agile. How do we get here in 2022? Where's this come from? Just cover some of the very basic concepts of Agile because they're often misinterpreted, and some of the Agile misconceptions, because we often talk about Agile about something that is it's easy to understand but difficult to master. And what I find frightening is how many people I come across who've got it completely wrong, either because they're passionately enthusiastic or because they're frightened of it. So it's quite interesting to cover off some of the misconceptions as well. So when I started out, I started out originally in IT a very long time ago, hence the grey hairs. And when I started in IT, basically that was a time when the world, business world, was ruled by machines. So we had these software engineers, and usually elderly gentlemen, interestingly, often smoking pipes in the computer rooms. And IT software was seen very much as magic. and it drove businesses. So you didn't ask for what you wanted. You begged for something, and IT basically would give you what they felt like giving you. And in the very, very early days of this, it was actually quite fun because there was little or no formal process, and you could just be as innovative as you wanted to be, and the attraction, you know, the instruction was just get it done, which if you worked in IT was great fun. If you worked in business, it was less good because you often got solutions that you didn't like, couldn't use or didn't work, but you were told that you should just be grateful. When we started this style of working, when IT became so dominant, there was one fundamental mistake, and that was the concept that software engineering worked very much the same as all other styles of engineering. So if you were doing engineering, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, you're dealing with things. The problem with software engineering is, yes, the computer's a thing, but you're trying to interface to a human who is not as predictable as a brick or a building or calculating the stress on a wall. So in the early years, while IT was the master, it worked okay. It worked while we kept users at arm's length. That was really good. When we got into the 70s, what came along then was this concept of quality. It was the first of the we need formal quality. So a bit like you have approval for building, they wanted a similar sort of quality process for IT. So in 1970, the Royce approach was published, and this is the original waterfall approach, called waterfall because it looks like a series of steps constantly going downhill from the beginning to the end, and it's a one-way track like a waterfall. And it was brought in place to manage development of large software systems, but it was designed very much for a static world where exception was the problem, where change was the exception and it was seen as a problem. So if you looked at page one of Royce's paper, you've got this very, very simple, very clean diagram with some small print at the bottom. What's interesting is if you look at this mindset, a lot of organisations are still working to this mindset, and it's actually constraining them, because if you roll forward from 1970s to the current world, in the 1970s you designed solutions around IT and you quite often had projects that ran for 10, 20 years. That simply doesn't work in the modern world. That change is a fact of life, and if you're still working to this defined sort of linear way of working, it's starting to cause a lot of problems. And it's interesting that Royce spotted this even in the 70s, because although page one said, do this, waterfall, defining how waterfall works, it's often misinterpreted because at the bottom, Royce stated, but the implementation, the simple waterfall described above, is risky and invites failure. So on page two, he presented a much, much more complex diagram. So rather than the simple waterfall on the left, he expanded it to this very, very complex diagram on the left. And unfortunately, most people never read page two. So a lot of organisations still are trying to work to this linear, predictable approach, and it causes a lot of problems. So that was in place for about 10 years. And then things started to change with the advent of PCs. So this is one of the very, very early IBM PCs. And these arrived on the scene in the 80s. And it was an absolutely fantastic time to be working in IT then, because suddenly as a developer, we had the ability to do things quickly and easily. So instead of having to write sort of complex JCL stuff, getting it punched on cards, get it sent away, then get it sort of sent off for compilation and find you've mistyped something, you could sit on a PC and you could actually sit with a customer and create a solution, ask them what they wanted, and then build it. And they'd love you for it. And they'd say, well, that's brilliant. And you think, well, that's brilliant. Would you like this? So this style of working was called rapid application development because it was a way of quickly creating solutions to problems. Great fun on both sides, both from the customer and the IT side, but quite often I will be honest, we did sometimes focus on the more interesting parts and skip the boring bits. So it was all about creation, not necessarily about scalability, not necessarily about deep testing. It was just walk in, do some magic, give somebody a solution, then walk away and walk on to the next customer. And it left a lot of legacy behind, because this was the late 80s that we started doing this rapid application development. By the early 90s, RAD was getting a really bad name, and it was often referred to as RAD cowboys, you know, coming in, doing the easy stuff and then swanning off and doing something else. And people suggested that RAD probably stood for rapidly achieving disaster or really awful design rather than rapid application development. And the risk we realised with the whole RAD approach was we were focusing on speed, and we weren't focusing on user driven, and we ended up with this uncontrolled spread of end users' solutions with multiple copies of corporate data. And still today, you often find you get multiple copies of information from companies because everybody's got their own version of the corporate address list. So we ended up with far too many unscalable solutions or unsustainable solutions, and that wasn't ideal. So by the mid-90s, some of us got together and we had real concern because RAD was getting such a bad reputation. There was a risk that it was going to be thrown out. And the people that were looking at this saying, well, it's not working. What we need to do is we need to go back to the bad old days, or in their opinion, the good old days where we had full control. So the risk was that RAD and the problems that RAD was bringing would drive a return to full waterfall. And that is really, really not the way forward. So what happened was a group of us got together that we needed a better way of working. We needed to look at what RAD was good and what things in RAD were bad. So a group of companies got together and recognised that, how does this work well? So DSDM, the first of the agile approaches, first of the RAD approaches, was created by a group of people from competitive organisations, from organisations that had no context, no relationship with one another, getting together and sharing their knowledge about what works well. You know, your RAD solutions, your good ones, what is it about them that's good? The ones that go horribly are wrong, what is it about those ones that are bad? And from that, we worked out what are the basics, and it made us realise that rapid and user-driven were fine, but they, in a corporate world, they still need control and quality. You need four parameters, not two. Control is not bad, quality is not bad, rapid is good, user-driven is good, so let's build all four. So basically, bringing their best practices and things that worked, approaches that worked, practices that worked, we built the first of the official RAD, proper RAD methods. And that was DSDM, Dynamic Systems Development Method. And it was a collegiate approach designed basically from UK corporates for the most part on best working practice. And we launched this, the first version was launched in 94, well, prepared in 94, launched early in 95, and then revised about 6 months later. So version two came out end of 95. And then following this one, a lot of other RAD style approaches followed. Most of these, interestingly, are US-based and guru-led. So you have these gurus who are the leaders of RAD. DSDM was always very different. It was always collegiate. There was always a group, and it was always sharing our own best practice. It was never somebody going away into a darkened room and defining a method. We built something that worked, and it was proved to work before we launched it. And actually, I did one of the first early adopter versions of the first version in 1995 with British Rail. I was the RAD manager at British Rail, and British Rail was one of the trials. Co-op Bank was another. I think Sysdeca was another. So that went nicely for a while. But once we got into 2000s, we started to realise that RAD, the term that we'd grown up with, was not a good word. So what happened, because of RAD, because RAD says rapid application development, people think that speed is the most important thing. or the most important or the only driver. And also this misconception that apparently if you do RAD, you can deliver the impossible in half the time. And I know some of us spent quite a lot of our time saying to people that RAD still applies the law of physics. If you've got 9 months worth of work, it will take about 9 months to deliver. You can't get it in 6 weeks because we're doing RAD. It's not that simple. So basically, a number of the representatives of the various bigger RAD approaches got invited to go away for the weekend. And I'm really annoyed because I couldn't go. And I know another colleague of mine from Sweden was also annoyed because he couldn't go. But there was a representative from DSTM, and that was Ari van Bennekom from Sweden. And we had representatives from things like extreme programming and various other agile approaches, Scrum. And basically, they decided to get rid of the word RAD and replace it with the word agile. And agile is a much better word, much more sensible word, because it suggests being flexible. It suggests the ability to bend. And whenever I think about agile, the image that comes to mind, if anybody remembers watching cartoons as children, if you remember that, I think it's Roadrunner, which is something like an ostrich, and he's constantly running down a road in America somewhere, and he gets hit with a crowbar on his neck, and the neck bends and he keeps running. And that is a very, very good description of agile. You get hit with stuff, you flex, and you keep going. And they came up with this Agile Manifesto, which is very good, very clear, but often completely misinterpreted. The only problem DSTM had with the manifesto is we never agreed with the word software. And we always replace that with solution. So the manifesto says that we value individuals and interactions above processes and tools. So people drive us, processes and tools support us. We value working solution above comprehensive documentation. The only value for the documentation is to support the solution in practice. In its own right, it has no use at all. We value customer collaboration above contract negotiation. That doesn't mean you can't use Agile under contract, but what we try to do when working with Agile under contract is making referring to the small print of the contract the last thing we do, not the first thing we do. And we value responding to change above following a plan. If you're not experienced in Agile, you will come across people who will tell you categorically that we're doing Agile, we don't have to document, or we're following Agile, we don't plan. That is completely untrue. If you're doing a large, complex project, yes, you absolutely definitely need a plan. Yes, you definitely need documentation for a solution that's going to be in production for the next 5 years and continuously enhanced. But we're driven by the things on the left. And the things on the right are what support us. They don't take precedence. The things in green are what are our primary focus. The things on the right are there to help us deliver what we need to deliver. So when we talk about Agile, Agile itself is an umbrella term. It describes a generic style of working. And there are lots of flavours of Agile, different Agile approaches. And interestingly, each one has specific strengths and weaknesses. I work with all of them, just about. I have particular favourites. Obviously, I love Agile PM because it's my baby, or it was originally. But if Scrum's the right answer, then Scrum's the right answer. Scrum is brilliant as a team-based process, but it's not so good as the big picture, the vision type stuff. Kanban is very good at visualization. Lean is good at work in progress. Agile program management is good at the higher level. Safe, scaled Agile framework is very, very good at distributed, complex IT projects. So if you're going to use Agile, the first thing to think about is what is the right Agile approach? And it's not about somebody coming in and telling you, this is my Agile approach, this is what you need. And I published a white paper on Agile Wars because I've got fed up with you get an organization working well with Agile and then a salesperson comes along and says, you don't need that one, you need mine. And people will throw out something that's working to bring in something new on sometimes on a sales pitch that's wrong. In my experience, obviously I'm a consultant, but the simple answer here is it's never ever going to be one size fits all. Every organisation I work with, I start by finding out what it is they do, what their problems are and what they need before I work out what approach or what combination of approaches they need. And that's part of this agnostic agile oath. I won't come in and sell a particular one. Nobody should do that to any organization. The first thing any consultant doing agile coming into an organization should do is listen and ask questions and then work out what's needed. So all the agile approaches share certain common features. They're all flexible. They're all designed to work very closely with the customer throughout. They're all designed to make sure that what we deliver at the end actually meets the business need. And the way we do that is we keep checking all the way through. And we also accept that while we're working, it's quite possible that the requirements will change. And this is not seen as a stopper. It's seen as normal. It's seen as business as usual. And for that reason, all of the agile approaches recommend that you defer the decisions on the detail until the last responsible moment. So, for example, if you are going to capture customer details, I can tell you very roughly how long that piece of work will take, even without understanding what your customer details are. Because I've done so many of these, I know that typically it's a medium size piece of work. It's not huge, it's not small, it's medium, even without understanding exactly what details you want. But at the end of the day, agile is a mindset, it's not a rule book. The application of agile, the way we do agile, the way we apply agile, needs in itself to be done in an agile way. So it's all about having the right mindset. It's not about steamrolling a process where you want people to follow the rules like lemmings and just do what the rule book tells you. When I train, when I coach, I challenge people all the time to, A, challenge themselves. If I tell them to do something or suggest they do something, I want them to challenge me. Where's the value? Why are we doing that? That doesn't feel right. And it might be that they need to change, or it might be that I've misunderstood. So it, for me, bringing agile into an organization is about working out where it fits and where it needs to be adapted and perhaps where the organization needs to adapt. And it's a combination of all those. It's never, here's my approach, just do what I tell you. Because when I go to do a transformation, I know agile very well, but I don't know the organization's details in and out. So it's about both of us working together to make this work effectively. So at its basic concept, agile is an empirical approach. And empiricism is the idea that you learn from experience and observations rather than theory or logic. So you might have read the book, you might think you understand it, but you only start to really understand something when you try and do it. You can read a book on building a wall, but it might not tell you, for example, that building a wall when it's as cold outside as it is today is not a good idea. So all the agile approaches are built around these three fundamental concepts, these three pillars. We've got transparency, we've got adaption, and we've got inspection. So transparency is that we want everybody to know what's going on. Anybody that wants to see where we are can see. We've got this concept. Something that was driven by the digital transformation, the concept of go see for yourself. If people want to know what's going on, they should be able to see live, or at least no more than 24 hours out of date, what's actually happening on the ground. So in Agile, there should be no hiding place. You can't pretend it's going well if it isn't, because Agile will wave red flags and say to you, do something about it. Do not ignore this, because you'll be really sorry. It won't go away. So transparency is one. Inspection, the idea that we don't just go away into a darkened room, take a spec, code it, display it, and at the end and expect it to fit exactly as specified, because that never works. So we have this approach of do a bit, show a bit, get feedback. And we use this concept of continuous feedback all the time to make sure that we converge from the requirement to delivering a solution that works. And that allows us to either find out early if we've got something completely wrong, or fine tune it if we're going slightly off key. So we're constantly checking. So if you're working with a customer, you don't just go away and sort of present them with a fait accompli at the end. You do a little bit and say, is that the sort of thing you were thinking about? When you said you wanted pink, is it that pink, or is it a different color you were looking for? So if you go wrong, you don't go far wrong, and that saves you a huge amount of time. And then the third part is adaption. That if you find you're wrong, it's perfectly okay to change tactical direction. And the important thing here is the word tactical. It doesn't mean you can change everything. It doesn't mean you can change the throw the baby out with the bathwater towards the end and say, no, I wanted something completely different. Everything you do is built on what you've just done and what you've agreed. And to all intents and purposes, if it's smaller tactical changes, you can do that as part of the ongoing process. If it's a more strategic change, then that would need to be handled more formally because it's a major thing that you have to deal with. It's not small and simple. If, for example, you were going to do a website and then somebody decided, no, they've changed their mind, they want to publish it as a book, that is a huge change. It's not something you just say, all right, then we'll swap it. So all the agile approaches have these three concepts at their base. What we then have to think about when you're working on anything is what's driving this particular delivery. So with all my customers, with all my projects, with all my programs, my starting discussion with my customer is, okay, what's driving this one? So you've got four things to play with here, and let's assume it's all going to go fine, you'll get all of them. But before we start work, what I need to do is understand from your point of view, if we run into problems, where would you be prepared to negotiate? And what would you defend to the death? So on the traditional approach, what happened was that we spend a lot of time doing the specification, and the specification would define the features that we want, and that would be signed off, usually in blood, and it became a fixed thing, non-negotiable. And when you put together a plan of delivering a specification, what we seem to do historically is we also promised that you would deliver it on time and we do it in cost, and you would, of course, be delivered a solution that was quality. And what happens as soon as you hit a problem with this fixed features, this traditional linear approach, if you hit a problem, typically we slip the deadline. If you slip the deadline, the cost goes up. And then you slip the deadline again, and then the cost goes up again. And because you're doing this linear style, you might be halfway through and people start to panic about the slipping deadline because that's a problem for the business. So they start compromising on the quality. So quite often the time, the cost and the quality are compromised just because of this linear approach, because you're trying to make sure you deliver 100% of the solution. What we do with Agile is we turn the approach completely upside down. So what we do from the right at the beginning, from end of foundations phase, if you're used to Agile PM, but you know, when you've got a reasonable idea of what you're trying to do, you agree a deadline, you agree a cost in terms of the resources, the people you're putting on this, and you agree that every element you deliver will be of the appropriate level of quality. And where we build the negotiation is around the features. So you might give me a list of 100 things you want, and at the medium level, you want all of them. But quite often when we explore the low-level detail, there's room to negotiate. I mean, a good example of this, the one I often use, is we need to be able to pay electronically. Obviously, you must have some form of electronic payment, but there's options here. Is it credit card? Is it debit card? Is it American Express? Is it PayPal? Is it all of them? Could you do with one of them? Could we just go with Visa and MasterCard as the most commonly used ones? So this is where we build the negotiation, but it's not at the high level features. It's usually in the depth of the features. You can get a very, very good working solution, a minimum viable product, a minimal usable solution, that it does the basics of everything you want on time, on cost, on quality. And quite often the things that you end up dropping are the things that have the least value, the least impact, the least pain, the things you would happily live without, because time is what's driving you. And for an awful lot of organisations these days, for an awful lot of their work, time is the driver. Delivering for a conference, delivering for a launch of a new product, delivering for an advertising campaign, whatever it is, in the modern world, time is often more important than getting 100% perfect, however long it takes. So we do things differently. So I like using analogies. And the analogy I use for Agile compared to a traditional approach is travelling. And my 7 years as a manager at British Rail brought this very much to mind. And when you travel on the rail, it's a much more predictable way of travelling. Even if you're travelling on the fastest train in the world, you know, the bullet train in Japan, you are still limited where you can go. You're still limited to points change and where other trains are. You can't just slip over onto the hard shoulder and go round a blockage. If you travel on the train regularly, you know roughly what to expect, but you also know that you can be disrupted with leaves on the line, people stealing the wires, a train's broken down, or just people playing up at the station and somebody needing to be escorted off the train. So train journeys are very, very predictable, apart from the unexpected. And that's exactly what a traditional, a linear style of waterfall approach feels like. It's predictable. It's like a train journey. Agile is very different. So the agile style of working, to me, is much more sort of ocean racing. Certainly sailing is a very good comparison. There's a lot more uncertainty. There's a high probability of change. Even if you're getting a ferry from Dover to Calais, or taking a small sailing boat from Dover to Calais, technically as a sailing boat you have right of way, but if there's a very large ferry coming towards you and he's not moving, you move because you need to. You move off track. So an agile style of working is constantly never being quite where you expect and constantly replanning to get to where you need to be at the end. So in an agile style of working, you would never say, right, in 3 weeks' time on Tuesday afternoon, I expect to be at this GPS point in the Atlantic. It's not that predictable. On a train, you can say, well, looking at this, my typical journey, if I get the 7:15 train out of Grantham, I'd expect to be in Leeds at X, and normally you would be. Sailing is not like that. So think about agile more like sailing, more like being uncertain, high probability of change, and considering this is perfectly normal. It's just the way things are. As stuff hits you, you adapt, you flex, you replan to get you to where you need to be. Interestingly, there's science behind that. The science behind this is this concept that you've got two things to deal with. You've got the requirements, which is the what you're trying to deliver, and you've got the solution, which is the how you're going to deliver it. And with the requirements, you've got everything from I know exactly what I want, right the way through to I've no idea what I want. And on the solution side, you know exactly how I'm going to do this, far from to the other extreme, I'm very, very uncertain. So if you know exactly what you want and you know exactly how to build it, life is simple. And a linear, a traditional, a waterfall approach is very good at simple. As you start to move out and your requirements become less well agreed, your way you're going to deliver this becomes less certain, life becomes complicated. If you're trying to do linear in that approach, what you'll find is people will say, well, it's no good telling me you don't know. I'm sorry, we need to get it written down. So you've got to imagine it. You've got to describe something, even if you don't know what it is. So traditional in a complicated world is beginning to struggle. Agile in a complicated world is in its element. As you move further out into complex, linear, traditional, waterfall will not work in a complex world because you need agreement, you need more certainty. Agile is loving it. That is just business as usual. Even anarchy, we're pretty good at. Most of you, if you work in a corporate world, you probably won't come across anarchy. My best example, I was working for a company owned by a very elderly gentleman in his 70s with the mind of a teenager. He owned the company outright and he stopped me in the canteen and said, Barbara, these mobile apps, he said, they're really good, aren't they? And I said, well, yeah, I'm thinking, you're asking the wrong generation. I said, my kids, yeah, I think they're great. He said, we should have one. Okay, what would you like it to do? He said, I don't mind really, as long as it's got the brand on it. How do you specify something like that? And how do you pin down somebody like that who is a strategic thinker with no concept or interest in the detail? It was a very, very interesting project trying to work out what would meet you know, a simple app to get into the app market so people would see the brand. Very, very interesting. But that's what anarchy feels like. Most corporates don't work in anarchy. You will normally be working sometimes in simple, but mostly these days in complicated and complex. So actually, you need to start thinking more about agile if you haven't thought about it already. Because in the modern world, you have to expect change and uncertainty. You'll hear people talk a lot about this concept of VUCA. The modern world is volatile, it's uncertain, it's complex, it's ambiguous. It just is. Nobody even buys a phone without hesitating to check if there's a new model coming out tomorrow. Technology is constantly changing. The world is changing. So we need to stop being frightened of it and accept that it's just the norm these days. So organisations and projects have got to be able to deal with uncertainty, the unknown, because the real modern world, the 21st century world, is very unpredictable. And it's the one thing that COVID taught people. Any project managers that laminated a plan in January 2020, how did that go then? I was supposed to be travelling the world in 2020 for the first 6 months, talking agile. I got as far as my first trip, got to Chicago, got out of Chicago about the day before the world fell apart, managed to get home, and then was stuck at home for the next 9 months. I ended up travelling the world via Teams. I did the same work, but I did it through the internet. We have to expect change and uncertainty, and we have to learn to deal with it, because the world is never going to go back to the way it used to be in the 60s, 70s, 80s. It just won't. And if you don't keep up with the pace of change, you're going to have real problems, because this is now about survival and about thriving. Organisations need to be more flexible these days. They need to be nimble. They need to adapt. And what we've seen over a number of years is that businesses can fail incredibly quickly if they don't see the signs. Blockbusters went bust. Kodak, leading brand for years, missed the digital photography. BlackBerry thought this minuscule keypad and a folding model was the way to go, and the world moved on. I was actually working at Nokia, and I remember a discussion with the technical gurus in Cambridge, and they wrote the operating system. And the discussion over lunch went, what do you think to the iPhones? And the answer was, they'll never catch on, because, I mean, they're not even any good at making phone calls. And there was a complete twist, a complete volt-face in the market, and Nokia missed it. And by the time they caught up, the world had gone. And far from being the leading brand, they're a sort of third rate. They have a small number of phones now. But the effect on, certainly on Finland, the Finnish economy was built around Nokia. The Finnish education system was built around Nokia. And they missed the turning point. They missed the pivot in the market. So no organisation is too big to fail, sadly. So a few misconceptions. The first one, the concept that agile is the answer. You're doing everything wrong. What you want to do is you should bin doing traditional. You need to become fully agile. And I see this an awful lot. And the way this message is framed is basically, if you look at an agile-ometer, congratulations, well done you, you're fully agile. If you're not doing agile, you're a failure. You must try harder. Agile is the answer to whatever you're trying to solve. The problem with that is it's not true. This is a message being put out by people that don't understand the complex corporate world. There are projects out there that I would not do agile because there is no value to switching it to agile. It is predominantly a predictable, repeatable process. Something like a desktop refresh rolled out across an organisation is not an agile project. It doesn't need to be agile. It's not volatile. It's not uncertain. You do one, there might be minor tweaks between one and the next. That's all. So I'd use a traditional approach, but I'd plug in a number of agile practices to try and improve things like the collaboration and the communication. The reality, if you look at the way we do work, is that the how is a spectrum. And as far as I'm concerned, anywhere on the spectrum is okay, provided you choose why you're there. The dangerous thing is if you have a default position. Well, we do traditional because we always do traditional. We do agile because we like agile. That's not the way forward. What we need to do is make a choice. And the choice depends on what type of business are you in? What about this particular piece of work? So it's about, for each piece of work, deciding where you want to be on this agileometer. And anywhere is okay, provided you've thought it through. What I also find, and I mean, I did a lot of work with one particular organization to try and work out the way they worked and the approaches they took. And what's become clear over many years of working with complex corporates is there is actually a corporate sweet spot. Most corporates that I work with work in the middle. They work from as agile as they can possibly be within reason, middle of the road, to we need to be more linear, but we're not working at the edges. Give you a particular example. This was a fairly traditional process within the organization. This was a normal agile process in the organization. And this was a process where we were trying to do agile, but it was being done under formal contracting, and we needed to make it a little bit more formalized than normal. So with this particular organization, we defined three standard processes. What we found, and what I found in most organizations, is that most large corporates don't work as the extremes. They do not work at the extreme agile, because that is often seen as the edge of chaos. And they don't work at the extremely linear, because that's actually seen as bureaucratic overload. Do the paperwork and it will be fine. And if you go to the right of extremely linear, you actually end up at edge of chaos anyway. So it's about recognizing that within most corporates, you sit somewhere in the middle. You're not normally working at extremely agile or extremely linear. Certainly in complex corporates, you don't. It's too risky. There's also a misconception that you can either do governance or you can do agile, you can't do both. I was coaching in Denmark and there was a stopper. We were having problems with the live systems. And basically, we were having problems with some of the agile teams because they said, well, it's nothing to do with us because we're doing agile and we have the right to be interrupted. And you have no right to apply governance to us because it says in the agile rule book that we're allowed to do exactly what we want. That's simply not true. Being agile doesn't negate the need for good governance, but you need to be asking the right questions for what's being delivered. So if you're doing agile, you need to ask questions about, is agile being done right? You can't come in with a traditional tick list because it just won't work. If you come in and ask me for my signed off functional spec, I'll just tell you I haven't got one, but I've got some really good photographs of post-it notes, digital photos of post-it notes, and that's a working specification at the moment. And there's lots of complex corporations that are formally regulated. And yes, they're doing agile. You can't refuse to do agile if you're a pharma. A colleague of mine worked closely in the pharmaceutical. I worked in financial, Ministry of Defence, manufacturing and insurance. We have to comply with governance, but we have to talk to governance about what they're asking for and where there's room to negotiate. But what you find is if you're working in a formally governed organisation, then agile is going to be constrained. Live with it. It just is. So I will challenge some things, but I also accept that some things are non-negotiable. It's a straight fact of life. So what we need to understand is doing agile in the corporate world is not the same as a couple of mates doing agile by selling DVDs out of their garage. It's still agile, but it's heavyweight agile. It's much corporate strength. So this perception that agile only works for small, simple projects is also not true. Complex projects need corporate strength agile, and in that environment, in my experience, Scrum on its own is rarely enough. This message that if you're doing agile, you can't do projects is wrong. It's misguided. And I've published a paper on this with three colleagues from the Project Management Association and the Australian Institute of Project Management. There's nothing contra to agile and projects. If you need to deliver projects, you can deliver agile projects. If you're just doing team continuous delivery, Scrum is brilliant. When it tries to do corporate strength, sometimes it falls into gaps. Give an example of a corporate strength agile project. I was the advisor. There were three Ministry of Defence supplier organisations that were bidding for the work for the fly-by-wire on the Eurofighter. And I was working on the supplier side because it was an agile bid and I was advising on the estimating for the agile bid. And my colleague was working on the other side of the Chinese wall. He was working on the Ministry of Defence bid side of it to assess the bids. We weren't allowed to talk to one another. My team won the bid. They delivered the fly-by-wire, and as far as I'm aware, it's never gone wrong. And you can't get more highly regulated than safety-critical fly-by-wire missile guidance and missile guidance system. We can also do small, simple projects. We can do the whole range of projects, but we need to apply the appropriate style. One of the things I'm also very keen on, as you'll appreciate when you look at me in the video, there's a perception that really agile's only for the young. Well, I'm challenging that and I continue to challenge that. When I was at British Rail, because I took on a lot of the graduates, my official title was RAD Manager. My unofficial title was RAD Mum, because I was looking after a lot of the youngsters. I'm older now, and somebody recently nicknamed me the Agile Granny. I'll live with that. So Agile's for everyone. It's not just for Kevin, but it requires applying common sense. Unfortunately, this isn't always common. But what I've seen is that agility is a natural human behaviour. We adapt to survive, most of us. And I've met 100-year-olds that are still very agile, although actually, you know, it's mostly mental agility. Although I saw a 95-year-old doing yoga today, that was just amazing. I've also met some young agile fanatics or older agile fanatics that believe that they're very, very dogmatic about what they do. And they come up with, it says in the book. They're not flexible about what they do. My favourite personal experience, a bit embarrassing. I did a presentation at a conference on agile, an agile project, a difficult one we delivered. And this guy came up to me afterwards. He said, I enjoyed your presentation, but it was wrong. I said, why was it wrong? He said, well, I've got the books, and he showed me his Agile PM handbook. He said, I carry it with me all the time. He said, you know, and that's the way I work. And I need to point out that on page so-and-so, he said, that's not what it says in the book. I said, oh, it's interesting. So you've read the book? He said, yeah. I said, have you read the introduction? He said, no. So I said, well, if you have a look at page whatever it is at the beginning. So if you see the introduction, do you see the name at the bottom? He said, it's Barbara somebody. I said, yeah, I wrote the book. Or I co-wrote the book. I said, it's a guide, not a rule book. It's something you use it to guide you, but you adapt as you need to. So please don't use it as the book says, therefore I must do it. If it feels stupid, ask why it's stupid, because one of the two of you is wrong, either you or the book. But it definitely won't work if you just follow the book. It was never designed to do that. You'll also see a lot about agile bragging. I go to conferences and people announce that they're doing Agile brilliantly, and I sit in the audience and I think, you're not. I know you're not. And that project you're presenting, God, talk about smoke and mirrors. It was nothing like as shiny as you're presenting. So take this with a pinch of salt, because the reality is often very different. Organisations say, now we're Agile. And if you look at it, they might have one very small Agile piece of work somewhere deep in the organisation. And everything else in the organisation is still very traditional. A full Agile transformation doesn't happen overnight. It's a major change programme. It's not a binary switch. It's not as simple as installing Jira or DevOps. It involves significant behavioural change. So it's not that simple. So Agile, after all these years, I've been fighting the norm for many years. It's finally getting out there. It's finally being accepted. So whenever you go onto Amazon, you're inundated with books with Agile in the title. Apparently you can do everything with Agile. You know, not just IT, testing, Agile HR, emotional agility, just getting results generally the agile way, marketing agile, there's so many. But you also see some misguided opinions. One of them is that agile is the solution to all problems. These are the agile fanatics. The other one is agile is a necessary evil. And these are people that are trying desperately to hope agile is going to go away. To me, both views are equally dangerous. The answer is, it depends. Agile is terrible in the wrong place, traditional is also terrible in the wrong place. It's about making the right choice. So if you look at the big picture for Agile, lots and lots to think about here. This is a drawing that I picked up, somebody trying to describe Agile. I think they did it at a conference. The main thing to remember is Agile is a mindset, but it's based around common sense. Common sense, things like the best way to communicate, if possible, is face-to-face, or if not face-to-face, then video. Another common sense thing is if you don't satisfy your customer, you won't have a business. We also talk about getting results through teamwork and collaboration. So we're driven by individuals and interactions rather than processes and tools. So things like having self-organising teams, working together, talking to one another daily, touching base daily, catching up on where we are, who's got problems, who needs help. But Agile is not just about being Agile, it's about doing Agile. And being Agile means everything you do starts from thinking about Agile, thinking about, can we cope with change? I'm not trying to pin anything down until I absolutely need to. So there's a lot to think about in Agile, but it's basically all around the people. All of these things I've highlighted are people-based. So it's a lot more than a buzzword. There's a lot more to it. It can be very simple. It can be incredibly complex, depending on what you're trying to deliver. Obviously, delivering fly-by-wire controls for the Eurofighter was incredibly complex. You and a mate selling DVDs, incredibly simple. But then you can always fold and start again, and nobody loses. Okay, questions? I'll stop sharing and hand back to Sev.
Hi, thank you so much for the presentation, Barbara. Just before I head over to the questions, the webinar is recorded and Barbara kindly sent me the presentation slides, so I will send everyone the recording and the slides.
And there's a couple I missed over, which they're in the original one, so you can still see them.
Now we have a question here. So the first one is, my colleagues are struggling to join with the error. Here is already a participant with this email participant token. Are you able to help?
Sorry, I don't understand the question.
So this question is by George.
Yeah.
If George, if you'd like to expand on your question, that would be great. We have a question by Amanda. Have you seen Agile methods used in the NHS?
Yes. And interestingly, I was doing some coaching with the NHS recently, and it was a lady who wanted to do more Agile. And the problem she was finding was everything she tried to do was running up against traditional thinking at the next level up. Yes, we want to do Agile, but we want everything formalised. And that was one of the difficulties we had. But yes, and I think, to be honest, Agile at the, you know, it needs more agile thinking and it needs management to start taking a more agile approach. You've got to be flexible. You know, what are the things we could do that are still safe, that are still legal? What are the, you know, we need to adapt sometimes, and sometimes you can't do things by rule of law. You have to do to adapt to whatever you're presented with. I'd love to do more work with the, you know, some of the large governance organisations, government organisations, but I find it very hard work because at the senior level, often there's this blocker that they want to do things the old way, but they want all the benefits of Agile. And somehow we've got to talk to the senior people to help them understand how they can gain from this without losing control, without losing quality. And to be honest, you know, NHS of all of them actually needs a lot of help at the moment. I was so frustrated. I had to say to this lady, I can't continue to coach you because it's not fair for me to take money from you, for me coaching you when you're saying, but I can't do any of this. I said, try and get me to talk to your seniors. Maybe I can explain to them how this could potentially help.
Yep. Thank you for that. We have another question. What is the difference between the different types under the
under the Agile umbrella, I saw that.
Yes, yep. Someone okay. else
missed me, so that I sort of saw it, so I could read it for once. If you look at Scrum is probably the best, the simplest, the most popular Agile approach. And the reason it's so popular is you can explain it on a page. And if you're selling to senior management, if you can explain it on a page, then you keep their attention span long enough for them to think it's great. But it's not the only Agile approach. It's not the answer to everything. So it's not Scrum equals Agile, Agile equals Scrum. Scrum is a very, very simple team-based way of working. Brilliant at what it does, but it doesn't scale. It doesn't consider the strategic view, the project view. For example, if you're doing Scrum, there's no concept of a beginning, a middle, and an end like you have in a project. And if you're delivering projects, you need an Agile project. Kanban is a way of managing things like work in progress. You know, Lean and Kanban, we often use Kanban boards to show things we've got to do, how's it progressing across a board, to see visual, demonstrable progress of this is all the work we've got to do, this is what's in progress, this is what's done. And we use that often in what's often a 2 to 4 week time box or sprint, to show how's the work going with the team in the sprint. And if we do it electronically, what we used to do at Nokia was the electronic versions of these boards. The system would pull around, pick up each team, and it would pick their board up and it would display it on high big boards above the coffee machines in the vice president's office, and it would sit there for 10 minutes or 5 minutes and it would go into another team. And when you know how to read them, you can look at it as a manager and say, oh, that looks okay, or oh dear, that looks really worrying, I'll go and talk to them. So this is part of the transparency. Agile project management is designed to deliver projects in a more complex environment. But my most common two is Agile project management with Scrum, because Scrum is brilliant at the team level and it's most commonly known for people that have been trained in Agile. But if you want to scale up, you need the wrapper to put the project bit on top. And that's what I sometimes describe as the grown-up bit. So what you're trying to do at the project level is protect the team from the project complications so that they can get on at work at full speed. SAFe is Scaled Agile Framework, and it's designed for very complex distributed IT developments. But it has minimal focus on business, so it wouldn't work on a business change. Agile PM will do a business change because it doesn't focus necessarily on IT. So they all have their strengths and weaknesses. If it's anybody's interested, I've got the Agile Wars white paper, which I can make available, and people can have a copy of that and they could read a bit more on that, if that helps.
We have another question. We are actually going through a lot of the questions, but I don't think we'll have time for each one. But there's an interesting question. For someone first learning about Agile, are there any key readings you can recommend?
Oh, gosh. There are some good webinars, obviously, excluding this one. There's a few out there that I recommend. Have a look at a webinar describing what Scrum does. What we could try and do, perhaps KRC, we could recommend some presentations or webinars, ones that are sort of useful rather than dogmatic or evangelical about my Agile is better than your Agile. Perhaps that's an action we could take for afterwards. So if you could make a note, could have a think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have an interesting one, actually. The difference between PRINCE2 and Agile.
Okay. PRINCE2 was the old-fashioned way of defining a project. And in itself, in essence, there's nothing wrong with PRINCE2. The problem I have with PRINCE2 is some of the people that use it, because it was never designed or written to be used as a weapon. But some of the project managers that apply PRINCE2 apply it like a weapon. So you can use PRINCE2 with any of the Agile approaches, provided you treat each release, if you like, as a stage. You don't treat each time box, each sprint as a stage. If you look at something like Agile PM with PRINCE, that was PRINCE with an Agile sort of put over the top of it. The difference between that and, say, Agile PM is Agile PM was written with Agile at the heart from the start. It was written from, we are doing Agile, what does an Agile project look like? And there's nothing in there that is anti-Prince. If you want to make each release a Prince stage, that's absolutely fine. But you need to be thinking Agile all the way through. Because I spend quite a lot of my time coaching project managers, program managers, helping them come away from the traditional style of thinking to understand that managing an Agile project is not about relinquishing control. It's about letting the team organize themselves, but making sure that they and you understand where the boundaries are. Empowerment doesn't mean do whatever you like. It's quite the opposite. And the reality is, in a well-run Agile team or a well-run Agile project, the discipline and the professionalism is often quite a lot higher than in a traditional project where you can get away with murder till about 5 minutes to midnight when it all comes home. In Agile, you can't get away with that, not if it's done properly.
Next question. What if a project using Agile cannot finish with the original budget? Are we going to spend more and more unlimitedly?
We're not talking about HS2, are we here? No, I probably won't get into that one. Is it an Agile project, you said?
If a project using Agile, so yeah.
Yeah, so if it's an Agile project, so my first question is, I would need to talk about what was your original plan like and what was your contingency, because if you haven't prioritized, if you've basically gone into this with more requirements, not enough room to negotiate, if you've gone for 95% must have requirements and you fix time, cost and quality, then you're at high risk unless you're in a very, very incredibly stable, well-performing team in a stable environment. So we normally reckon on no more than 60% effort on your must-have requirements and about 40% on your shoulds and coulds, something like that. Then we can fix time, cost and quality and negotiate features. If you don't build in enough contingency, and when we talk about cost, we're talking about the headcount count cost, not your expenditure, not buying new software and stuff like that. It's something you need to know a bit more about. But if you want to send me a little bit more detail, I can try and have a think about why that might have happened. Certainly, it's something that when you know, if you're stopping it, if you can't finish it, then you would need to do a retrospective and look at what went wrong with your planning. Because if you didn't build in enough contingency and it's a big project, then you were highly at risk from the start. And Agile isn't going to take... It doesn't make risk go away. It just gives you different risks to deal with. If people refuse to drop requirements when you come down to it, and I've had that with a contractual project, the customer asked for Agile. And when I said, OK, we need to drop something, he said, I didn't want that bit. I wanted the quicker delivery. I wanted to deliver on time, on cost, on budget. But I didn't know I had to drop stuff. And you think, well, we did explain that. So it's making sure you've got a good working relationship. And something like the project approach questionnaire in Agile PM gives you a very good starter to work out the relationship of what you're building at the beginning of an Agile project. It's very useful for that to get a gut feel for, is this going to be a good one, or is this going to be really hard work, or is this actually far too risky to do even trying to use Agile?
I think we'll answer one more question. Just in the meantime, I am going to put up a little feedback just to understand whether you like the webinar, etc. So the last question is, what would you recommend to keep tabs, sight of all the different Agile projects in a public sector organisation so as to avoid duplication?
You need, basically, above the projects, you need Agile programme management, you need Agile portfolio management. You literally need the layers of corporate strength Agile. If you're interested at the strategic level, the Agile portfolio management is not an approach. It gives you a lot of good guidance, and it would help, for example, a PMO at the portfolio level to help keep track. But you know what you've got in a complex organization, you've got projects running under programs. So we need to set the programs up as an Agile way of working so that you can drill down to whatever level you want to look at. If you're at the strategic level, you might want to look at the program level. If you're at the program level, you want to dip into the projects, but you need a way of sort of subsuming all these up into some sort of dashboard that people can quickly, easily get the transparency that they need so they can go see for themselves.
Yep, perfect. Thank you so much for that. If you do have any more questions, you can always email Barbara. I'm sure she'll be more than happy to help you.
I'll do my best within reason.
Yeah, of course. I can see some of you giving some feedback, which is always great. So thank you, everyone, for joining. And once you finish the feedback, you're welcome to leave.
Will I get a copy of the chat? Can I get a copy of the chat, Sev, as well? Can I can see?
Of course, yes, definitely.
Because I saw Andrew recommended, you know, lots of KRC webinars and things as well, which would be useful. I don't look at those, obviously. I don't look at the website to see what webinars I can watch. Mm-hmm.
Certainly receiving positive feedback, which is always great.
And I'll send across a copy of the Agile Wars white paper if you want to share mm-hmm. that up on the website as well.
Yep, that would be great.
Okay. Yes, it's somebody's asked for my email address. It's on the slides. So as soon as you send the handouts out, mm-hmm. My email address, I think, is on my introduction slide.
Yeah.
If not, you can find me on LinkedIn.
The Agile Resources. Which Agile resources are you exactly talking about? Is it the one that Barbara mentioned?
I think there's two lots, aren't there? There's ones that I can send over, yeah. And then Andrew mentioned some resources on the KRC mm-hmm. website as well, which is probably the best place for the mm-hmm. the Agile stuff.
Yep, I will send everyone both. So both on the Agile KRC and then the things Barbara will send to me. I will most probably send it either today or tomorrow. So you should have everything accessed by tomorrow.
It's obviously not easy when you've got everything from I don't know anything about Agile to I'm an expert, mm-hmm. so I was trying to cover.
Yes, I will email Barbara's email.
Can I, if I send a message, will it come on the chat?
It should do, yeah.
Put my name right.
But I will also include it in the email.
Oh, see, I've spelt my name wrong again. Too many A's. No.
I think that should be fine for now. Just a few people are typing.
There's still a few online then.
Yeah.
Should have used my KRC email, but I can never remember it, so.
I can always send them both, should be fine.
Well, I always check the other one anyway, more regularly, because I can see it on my phone, so.
Okay, I think that should be it. Thank you, everyone, for see if there's any other questions you can ignore. My thanks, Andrew.
You're not saving difficult questions till last, are you, Andrew?
Okay, I think that should be it for now. So thank you, everyone, for joining. Thank you so much, Barbara, for joining. Really enjoyed your presentation, and I'm sure a lot of people did as well, as you can see from the feedback. So thank you so much. So I'm just going to end it now.
Do we stay on?
No, you can just exit. I'm just going to end it now so everyone will actually be kicked out. Bye, everyone.
Bye.